Hi, y'all. I'm Katie Parker. I'm alcoholic. I've had the gift of sobriety since October the 28th of 1984. Yeah. That was a special day. It's really something. In a couple of weeks, I'll be 41 years, and that's a big deal. But today, it was a little disappointing to still be standing at 40. I wanted 41. You know, you just look forward to that moment in time. I want to thank everybody that had anything to do with getting me here. I take this very seriously. I take recovery very seriously, and we also have a blast. My home group is the Primary Purpose Group in Austin, Texas. If you've ever been to one of them, they're really cool. And if you don't like it right away, stick with it for a little while. You will really see this thing change your life. We also have one on Zoom. If anybody's interested, I can send you that link. But we meet on Tuesday nights at 2701 South Lamar. And you'd be surprised how many people actually swing by there when they're in town, or they'll make an extra trip to stay a day or two to see it. We have about 150 people studying the book, and it's a really cool deal. But I got to tell you, when Art called me, what a trip. I mean, I swear there was a fine line between, is this guy really who he is, or is he screwing with me? You know what I mean? You know, he said his full name, and it was like, okay, sir, I am here, sir. I'm not quite sure if I'm getting pistol whipped or what is happening. But, you know, and then he said, it's a men's group. And I thought, praise God, I have finally been invited to the men's group. Because I don't know if you guys know this, but in AA, when there's a women's retreat, sometimes they have men speakers, but they never have a female come for you guys. So this was a real honor. And he goes, no, it's co-ed. That's okay. That's fine. We can still work it. But I got the honor to be with them yesterday. And I'm telling you, it was a treat. We'd have drank together hands down. That's the highest compliment. It's the highest compliment you can give an Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we'd have drank together, but we'd have gone to jail together, too. And that's where they would have separated us, you know, which would be too bad. You know, if it's a chick that I'd have drank with, we'd have Thelma and Louise it at the end of the deal, you know. But, and I love drinking, man. If I could get away with drinking, I'd get away with it today. But it didn't work for me. And Ben, thank you very much. Where are you sitting, Ben? Oh, perfect. Thank you very much. Ben has been nothing but a gentleman, has picked me up, has been fantastic early on the spot, held the door for me, the whole nine yards. Always appreciate that. You know, we come into Alcoholics Anonymous and we have to grow up. We have to be respectful. We have to have integrity. We have to do all of this. And I was giving the boys last night, and I say boys because I don't care if you call me a girl. I have no offense against boys, men, whatever the deal is. If that's an issue, you got to write inventory on it. I don't have a problem with it. And, you know, I mean, so I had all the boys last night and I was telling them, I said, you know what? You got to be careful about stag meetings, you know, because some guys just only do stag meetings. And that's dangerous because you get a little Neanderthal-ish, right? Same with women. They get too weepy, you know? So, I mean, it goes for both teams. So, you know, you gotta get out there and you gotta blend. You gotta learn how to be with them, because that's, once you walk out that door, you're with the opposite sex, like it or not. So, my husband always would say, when one of his sponsees would call, he goes, hold on a second, Katie, take it. I'm like, okay, so what's going on, you know? And there's just a little bit deeper level. And at the same time, the fact that you guys can do A plus B equals C and shelf an emotion, we are jealous. Okay, so don't ever be fooled by that. We may give you grief, but I wish I could do that. I wish I could have an emotion and just shelf it. But I don't know how to do that. I wasn't wired that way. I am extremely passionate. My husband likes to say I'm like taking a drink out of a fire hose. I'm a lot coming at you. And I get very, very passionate about Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I've been around a while. And let me tell you, I wasn't nailing it. You know, I wasn't nailing it for many years. I didn't know any different. And let's see if there's... Oh, and then Pete, where are you that gave me the angel coin? There you are. He gave me a coin. It's too long a story to tell, but it was my first husband died tragically, and he gave me the coin that Joe used to pass out to people in AA, and I couldn't believe it right before I was getting ready to speak, and I was emotional. And he found me today and gave me another coin, and that was just really special, really, really special. You know, one of the things is, and I hope you have this in your life, is I'm an AA member. Okay, I may be behind the podium, but I am a drunk just like you are. And if you have problems, I give you my card, I give you my phone number. I am here for you. You can call me with any problem, as long as it's not too sexual. I can't do that with the boys. The girls, bring it, bring the heat. But with the boys, I can't do that. But I can help you out of a tough spot, I promise. That's the beauty of having 41 years. Been there, done that. Know what it's all about. When I was on the plane, I'm kind of funny. I'm old school. I was raised by World War II vets. And I think the kids today could benefit from being raised by World War II vets, but we won't go down that road. And, you know, you got your butt kicked. You know, you didn't get this done, get this done. This is the way we operate here. And I'm on the plane, and I decided to do carry-on, which I never do. And the bag is so heavy, and I'm 67 years old. And trying to lift that bag this way is too much for me. I may look like I got guns, but they got no strength, right? They're all show and tell. So I look at this guy and I said, sir, could you help me lift that bag? And he said, no. I thought, oh, you got no idea who you're saying no to. And I absolutely was shocked. And the guy standing next to him goes, move out of the way, buddy. I got it. And I thought, I looked at him. I thought, I'm just going to pretend like you don't understand English. You know what I mean? Is what I thought. Wow. You know, and I was just taken back by that. And I thought, you know what? I'm in the real world. I got to behave. You know, sometimes we got to do that. The real world isn't always the greatest out there for all of us. There's, I like to also say, you know, I'm an AA member. I've been around a while. I know the book pretty darn well, but I'm living the book too. And I like to say I am the vessel to help you get connected to the power. I'm not the power. I don't know what job you should take, what car you should buy. I always like to say, I don't know what boy you should date, but I know the one you got ain't it, right? Let's, this is a big problem, but I really don't know what God's got in store for you. Maybe you got to learn a lesson 110 times before you're going to see it. You know, I know that's been the case for me. I also like to say that the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous was named as one of the 88 books that changed America. Have you ever heard that? First time I heard that, I thought I'm saying that at every talk. One of 88 books, and it sat on my shelf for 15 years. And I said that in front of a group of about 2,500. And for some reason, there was a collective groan. And I got a hair trigger reaction. You know what I mean? I'm just that girl. And I looked at him, I said, oh, like your book hadn't sat on the shelf. Everybody in here is nailing it from day one. Come on, you know? And to me, it was so interesting because the truth of the matter is the directions are clear cut, but everybody has a different experience. That's what Dr. Bob said, right? The directions are clear cut, but everyone will have a different experience. And I think some of the tough things that happen, I'm going to set this down here. I'm going to use it in a minute. I think the tough things that happen is sometimes we get lost that you have to have the experience to help somebody. That is not true. If you lost a child, you've been raped, severely beaten, you know, by the opposite sex. Now that you need to talk to somebody else. If that's never happened to me. But anything else, if you're a hairdresser, you don't have to go talk to a hairdresser and figure out, have you ever had this experience with a customer? My job is to point out how self shows up for you. How did you make a decision based on self that put you in this position to be hurt? That's all the book is trying to get us to wake up to and to get unblocked so we can connect to whatever power we want. We throw the gates so far open on the power. You know, one guy, well, I was at a very big event that was just a bunch of blowhards is all we were. You know, we all had an opinion. And this one guy was just flipping out about the atheist, agnostic, whatever. And Charlie goes, so you really think that's going to run the new guy off is the power? He said, I think the not drinking is going to be a big problem for him on day one. Yeah, all they hear is, so I don't get to drink at all? Okay, I don't care what fairy stuff you want me to believe in. Kiff Collins, if you ever got a chance to hear him, he's an amazing, amazing individual. He used to say it's easier to get an alcoholic to stop drinking than it is to get one of us to quit playing God. And if that really resonates with you, especially if you're like me, the ego turned out, you know, this thing keeping it quiet is not an easy task. The ego turned inward is the same alcoholic I am. It's just a different way that self shows up. So I have to learn how to shut up. They need to learn how to speak up. So don't get lost on that. You know, if when the book talks about this extreme example of self-will run riot, though she usually doesn't think so, you'll think to yourself, well, I'm not like her. And it's like, oh, no, we're all in that pot. It's just how self shows up for you that gets us in trouble. See, alcohol was the solution, not the problem. I did not realize that. So when you take away my solution of drinking, I don't get okay, right? I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. The rest of the world, for you guys that are not alcoholic, when you see us stop drinking, you're like, thank God. And what you don't understand is we are wrapped tighter and tighter and tighter till we snap. And then we take a drink and you're just devastated. What happened? I thought booze was the problem. See, I thought not drinking was the finish line. I'm not alone in that thought. Let me tell you, it's interesting because don't get me wrong. We need you not drinking. That's a very important part of recovery. But I thought that was it. Now my job is to go out here and to be a good person, right? I'm going to show up and be a good person. We were learning in back in the 80s. How many of you guys got sober in the 80s, early 80s? Yeah, most of them aren't here, and they're not necessarily not drinking. They just ain't here anymore. They grew out of AA. They don't need it anymore. But I guarantee if their families were here, they'd be wishing they were back here. See, that's the problem is we just think we've gotten to the finish line. I don't need AA anymore. I got it from here. You know, I'm doing this. I'm doing that. I did all of the above. I'm telling you, I've done it all. There's not much that I haven't done that most of you guys have done too. So that's one of the reasons I like when I get a chance to tell my story, because it gives you a like, I haven't ever heard it put that way, or wow, she's got a point there. That did happen to me. It's interesting in the forward to the second edition. I'm going to move this down without trying to turn it off. Dr. Bob, this is when Bill and Bob met. This is why Alcoholics Anonymous is such a big deal. Dr. Bob had repeatedly tried spiritual means to resolve his alcoholic dilemma, but had failed. Now, he knew the Oxford group was the answer, right? What they were doing, he knew Bill knew that the problem with Silkworth was the physical allergy and the mental obsession. And he knew that God was the power. He didn't have the program of action. That's what Dr. Bob had. So when those two came together, I was reading some history about it took the prohibition. Imagine if prohibition happened today. I'd be okay. But the rest of the world would not be okay. If prohibition happened, the Depression and World War II, it required those three disasters to happen for Alcoholics Anonymous to be born. And I always like to say what that important point is when you are in your darkest days, there will be the sun shining. But you got to get through that dark day to get to the brightness. So we want to come in here and get rid of all our problems. No more problems. We're fine. And that's just not the way it works. We got to have these problems to break through. That's the spiritual awakening is the problem. The enlightenment is when you're in the good spot. And I had that all mixed up. So it says, Dr. Bob repeatedly tried spiritual means to resolve his alcoholic dilemma, but it failed. But when Bill gave him Silkworth's description of alcoholism and its hopelessness, Dr. Bob began to pursue the spiritual remedy for his malady with a willingness he had never before been able to muster. He's sober, never to drink until the day he passed. See, the whole world has a malady, right? That's human nature. The only problem is our malady takes us back to a drink. That's why we have to do this, because for us to drink is to die. But you can die sober in these rooms too. So, you know, I mean, it's a tricky one. I'm the youngest of three kids. Like I said, my dad was a World War II vet, and you knew it because he told you. And he ran a household like that, but we were a fun house. He was a drinker in 1968. We had the entire Buffalo Bills at our house. I mean, it was so fun. My mom was in the back yelling at somebody, and I kept thinking, I couldn't figure out this man or woman came out from the back, and she's yelling at him. And I never understood until I was older, and I thought, oh, they were in her bed. Okay, I got it now. I mean, think about the football players back in those days. I mean, early, late, middle 60s and 70s, they're wild anyway, but they were really wild back then. So I knew my home was something interesting. But what I didn't understand, you know, is I was the youngest of three, and we were all, you know, pretty much 2 years apart. That's kind of what you were doing back in the day. And I mean, I came out of the womb with, you know, like Mighty Mouse. I mean, don't dare me. Don't devil dog dare me. You know, Red Rover, let Katie come over. I'll break your arm. You know what I mean? I swear to God, I think I don't really believe in reincarnation. But if there is, when my time comes, I got a question for the creator. And that is, was I in the military in a previous life? Because I know I was special forces. I was not an enlisted man, but there is something in me that I'm the first one to run into a burning house. That's just my nature. And it's interesting because I love that part of me, but boy, can it get me in trouble. I've learned to, this is tapped down. So almost 41 years, this is tapped down. And I also like to say about your childhood, you know, see, when we were getting sober, it was all about, you know, inner child work. And don't get me wrong, I'm not flying in the face of any of that stuff. But in the 80s, that was a big deal. You know, Bradshaw, what color's your parachute? You know, all of that stuff, you know, relive your childhood, rebirthing and all of that stuff. And that stuff was very beneficial. What it taught me today is how to hear inventory at a deeper level, which I'm very, very grateful for that. It did not treat my alcoholism. And I didn't realize that because in counseling, and I think counseling's a privilege. Don't ever hear me not say it's not a privilege. But the problem is the counselor's going to say, who are you upset with? That's column one, dad. What he did, column two. What it affected, my self-esteem, my pride, my column three. And that's their job. And then you take that to your sponsor because she's going to take you to the fourth column. Where did you make decisions based on self, right? So that's why it's so important to not just go to counseling and think you got your problem solved. You be alcoholic. You have got to see it from an entirely different angle. And that's the beauty of what that does. I also like to ask my sponsees before they found the drink, if the drink was the, you know, was treating my alcoholism, what did you find before you... You were alcoholic. And I went back into my life and my sister and I love to hyperventilate. I don't know if you guys were doing, of course they've turned it sexual. Good God, everything is sexual. You just want to go, what has happened in our world that everything has turned sexual? But we used to just, you know, at 8 and 9, just choke each other out in the bedroom. it was fabulous. And that moment where you're coming back in and you're like, and you know, you're like, do it again. And you can tell the Al-Anons in the room, right? The Al-Anons were the ones running out going, they're choking themselves in there. You know, we're just like, oh my God, I loved that feeling. I knew right away that was something I wanted to achieve again, right? Because you can't find a drink. I mean, if you were drinking at 8, whatever. But, you know, I mean, it was long before that. And then I was also a sick kid. You know, it was back in the day. It was called the croup. So I had the humidifier and everything. And I had that bottle of Vicks Formula 44 by the bed. And I still take a pull off my cough medicine. My kids are like, don't touch that. Mom put her lips all over it. You know, and I'm like, I just remember taking that pull. And that was back when Vicks had alcohol in it. And it was just warming, you know, that burn going down. Some people didn't like that at all. Well, they're not alcoholic, right? So, and then there's another piece of this puzzle that's interesting. I've been around a while and I've heard a lot of speakers. I've got a lot of speakers that are friends. I know a lot of AA members and a lot of people said they took the drink and the drink finally made them feel okay in the world. That was not my experience. I liked who I was from day one. I took that drink and believed that you needed to know how great I was. So that's how it turned on me. Let me tell you, whole world isn't excited that Katie walked in the room. Oh Jesus, here she comes. I have a feeling Art had the same thing going on, you know. It's like you're damn lucky to be in my presence, let me just tell you that. And I mean, he and I swear to God, whoo, could have been the day. It's interesting, you know, my mom died when I was young. She had a kidney disease and it was back in the 60s, 1967. Dads were, you know, traveling, they were doing the work, the mom was a stay-at-home mom. It was just the day and age we lived in. And my dad, you know, he was working for Union Carbide at the time and he needed to have somebody take care of these three kids. So he remarried 3 times in 18 months and we had 4 live-in housekeepers all through that. So just let that settle with you. Charlie used to say, boy, he could close a deal. He could close a deal. Couldn't keep it closed, but he could close the deal. And I would have told you when I came into AA, as a matter of fact, I believe when I came, oh, this Florida humidity, this should be interesting what the hair does. It's either going to be look like a wet rat or just frizzed out. when I came into AA, I would have told you that made me alcoholic, because I think there's a big misunderstanding of why you're alcoholic. You know, the teetotalers keep the booze out of the house and the kid still is alcoholic. I believe it's a genetic bullet. It's not up for argument with you. That's just what I believe. And I'm the only one in my family that got it, but there was alcoholism riddled through my family. And my sister's an Al-Anon that likes to get her drink on, and my brother's a hard drinker. Given sufficient reason, he can stop or moderate. That was not my experience. So when I began to understand more about alcoholism, I began to see it more interesting. So what happened with my mom dying? It influenced my old ideas. See, the book says that we have to get rid of these old ideas. The result was nil until we let go absolutely. And then you ask somebody, when you're listening to their problem, you got to be able to be a little armed with the facts and look for what their old ideas are, because not all old ideas are bad. See, like the old idea that it's good to be respectful. Well, that's good until you take it over the limit, right? It's good to be sure you're telling people stuff. Old ideas like, I'm a good mother, but I'm really a better mother than you. I'm a good AA, but I'm a better AA than you. So these old ideas get you in a lot of trouble. And that's what you got to keep watching for. I had a kid. I came in at 26 years old. I was a single mother. Whoo, was that ugly, 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 ugly. You know, I managed to figure out how to drink with that poor little girl. And she's 45 years old now. And thank God we have managed to have a relationship, an incredible relationship. And then I have a 10-year, my son was 10 years younger than her. He's 35. But, you know, she was a 5-year-old, a pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. I know it. You have the eyes of a kid looking at you and you're not getting out of bed and you're screaming at them and they're 3 years old running around. You know something's wrong with you. But I would have never guessed it was alcohol. It's just, I got to stop partying so much. I'm just partying too much. See, I had no idea that physical allergy was what gets it. See, when I start, I can't stop, and I can't stop start. There's two parts to alcoholism, and I think there's 90% of the people sitting in the rooms of AA that do not know what it means to be alcoholic. They must be one, but they don't know. And I didn't know it until I was 17 years sober, neither did Charlie. Oh, God bless Charlie. I miss him so bad. But my story starts with, it was Halloween. I was dressed, this is going to shock you, as Tina Turner, one of my heroes. And, dang, I was looking good. I was invited to a really hopping party. I felt like I'd hit the big time. I was going with the drinkers and the drug users that were here, not here. So I thought I'd really hit the big time. Long way around the bar, my crappy car broke down, and I had met this young man that was coming in to hear Bob Earl. I mean, talk about the silver linings of what God does. If you'll watch, every day you're being sent a lifeboat. But if I'm not watching for it, I won't see it. People say, well, I don't see any burning bushes in AA. You're not watching. They're everywhere. We are the luckiest group of people. I think we've been given an extra dose of something. And this young man was coming. He was chasing one of my buddies that was, for better, you know, a better way to put it, my role in the hay buddy. Okay, you with me with that? So let's try to keep it clean. I know I'm at a men's meeting. You can tell by the beating on the table and the Oh my God. Last night I was trying to tell the guys, I said, look, I'm not against men's meeting. Please don't hear me ever say that. But some folks only go to men's meeting. Well, you're missing how to become a part of society. So this guy walks up, it's all the guys and us, and we're at the country club, and he comes over and he stands between me and Art, and he pats us both on the back, and my pat was lasting a little longer than I was ready. I thought, I'll give him a break. In about another 4 seconds, it's like, dude, get your hand off my back. But he goes, well, what are y'all doing, talking about sex? And the guys looked at me, I said, that's what I'm talking about. Just FYI, that's where it just, you know, and then so you think if you stay in men's meeting, you don't do that. That's incorrect mundo. Okay, just saying. I will not get off on this because I'm honored to be here. I'm honored to be here. And if Charlie was still alive, when Art called me, I said, so I'm being invited to a men's group? Praise God. And he goes, no, there'll be co-ed. It was like, that's okay. The majority of the men. So, you know, and I'm telling you, I've been a tomboy all my life. I'm the president of the Shotgun Shooting Club in Austin, Texas. If you ever come, please come shoot with me. I know how to live in this world with both sexes, right? And so I don't have any issue in that area. So this young man is coming in to see Bob Earl, and that my role in the Hey Buddy is bringing him to the house. And when I looked in his eyes, I knew I was going to marry him. Now, I didn't realize that they were in AA, and I wasn't sure what that meant. And I thought it was trench coats and a paper cup, right? That's just what I thought Alcoholics Anonymous was. Needless to say, I chased this boy into the rooms of AA because I knew I had a problem. I wasn't an alcoholic. I just wanted his attention. I knew three people in that room. That's never good. Okay, if that's, you know, people in AA got a little bit of a problem going here anyway. And so I chase him in the rooms. He had 6 years. I had 10 minutes, and it was a match made in heaven, you know? And I tell you, it really was. Joe and I were together for 20 years. And a heartbreaking story. He was the father of the son that was born 10 years after April. He adopted April. And we're sitting in the rooms of AA, and we have some tragedy. We have some tough stuff happening. But I had no idea we were not treating our alcoholism. I had no idea that you need to continue to write inventory. What? I thought the first one was all you needed to do. I'm doing 5 meetings a week. We're really just kind of going in there whining, right? I missed the whole boat. So did Joe. And it was really, really sad. I thought AA was about drinking. I had no idea that physical sobriety looks like recovery, right? That physical sobriety is not recovery. I didn't realize that. My story is all about that. I thought counseling was for learning, you know, how to live in life. And once again, I'm not against counseling. I'm a big fan, especially in your marriage. If you're having troubles, you need a mediator. You need somebody that goes, did you hear her? Okay. Did you hear him? Okay. Because, I mean, you need that mediator sometimes. Otherwise, for alcoholics, I mean, you know, been married 1 year. I mean, one time, two times, three times, four times, five times. I mean, you just get a lot of marriages if you're not careful, right? And then everybody wants to blame the other person. So just an observation, guys. And then I thought church was all about finding God. I had always leaned towards Christianity. So at about 3 years sober, the shine was starting to wear off in AA, because I think that happens between 18 months and 3 years. The shine starts wearing off. Joe says, hey, do you want to go to church? And I thought, not really my cup of tea. And non-denominational churches were happening. And he said, just come and see this, Katie. And when I walked in, that music and everything, I was like, oh my God, I fell in love with it. And that's what we do. We're like chameleons. We find something and we throw ourselves into it. And what I didn't understand when I woke up in 17 years, in the book, it said, and once again, this book started coming alive in a way I'd never seen it before. And it took me a while to even be willing to listen to somebody with the book. I'm like, I already know everything. So, oh yeah, I'm assuming I'm sitting with people. I assumed I'd see a little more heads nodding, but I'm seeing some really wild-eyed looks. So Carl Jung and Roland Hazard, right? Most of us know that story. Carl Jung was a psychiatrist. He realized a psychic change was necessary. But could you imagine if he came out with that? I mean, could you imagine if you went to go see a psychiatrist today and they said, you need a psychic change? They're like, you're going to take these 19 pills. They're all going to have a side effect. So sorry about that. You know, so Carl Jung had to keep this on the down low with he and Bill when they were talking. So Roland Hazard went over to Europe and he was there for one whole year. And Roland Hazard was going to the boat to come home. He's from a very wealthy family. And he drank after that 1 year. And he went back to Carl Jung and he said, what is the problem? Carl Jung said, I've been trying to make this vital spiritual experience happen. And this is Roland Hazard. Upon hearing this, our friend was somewhat relieved, for he reflected that after all, he was a good church member, so was I. This hope, however, was destroyed by the doctor telling him that while his religious convictions were very good, in his case, they did not spell the necessary vital spiritual experience. So it doesn't mean don't go to church, but church is along with working the 12 steps. Right? Not just going to AA meetings. You have to do both. So I missed, as I said, 110 times, I missed a lot of that. That was a big piece of my story. I think the gifts of sobriety take us out. I've watched tons of people around 6, 7, 8 years sober start having kids. The next thing they know, their lives get busy. They get the better job. They go back to school. They do all the things that they need to do, because it says when we rest on our laurels, it's the dangerous thing. And let me tell you, there's no doubt about that. When Joe and I went to church, I mean, we're very much chameleons. We looked Amish. I mean, it was like, We brought in basically Celebrate Recovery was kind of the thing we were doing, but it was called Lion Tamers back then. And after about 3 years, we were losing our mind. And I always like to say, I started wearing underwear when I went back to church. I mean, that's how converted I was. And Larsine is one of the greatest Al-Anon speakers we have. She goes, I don't know why that's not in y'all's literature. None of you alcoholics wear underwear. Not a bad point you got there, Larsine. But at about 3 years, Joe and I realized that we're in real trouble. So now I've got 6 years sober, and Joe was always 6 years more than me. He's got 12 years sober. And he said to me, Katie, he goes, I'm not doing well. And I said, I'm not doing well either. And I said, what should we do? And he goes, let's go back to AA. And we still had all our AA friends. Don't get me wrong. I mean, we were all about staying sober. So we go back into the rooms, and we went back to our old home group. There was Ed Hasbrook. I mean, all my peeps were there. And I leaned over to Joe, and I said, you know, honey, we're home. We're home. And he said, I know. And I mean, I will always feel good in here. This room is where I belong. Whatever else I do has to be along with, not instead of. I belong in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I belong with the alcoholics. My work here is to get to a place that I can help you, but still help myself. Sometimes sponsoring people really feels good, and we don't do our own work, right? That's a very, very easy trap to get into. I always like to talk about spiritual maturity. Between 18 months and 3 years is where the guy's really in trouble. And I say guys just because that's what I say. And they're really in trouble because they don't understand the root of their trouble is selfishness and self-centeredness. They think you got the drink off of me, I got it from here. Then we hit another wall between 3 and 5, 5 and 7, 7 and 12, 12 and 15. You have to hit these walls spiritually because they're the nature of it. It's like the difference between what you knew at 20 and you know at 40 is huge because you've got 20 years experience. Spiritual growth and maturity go hand in hand. So you have to be open to new things, new ideas, the different things that are happening in your life. What's coming at you? Losing people, losing jobs, divorces, kids don't talk to you. You know, we have some of the most unfortunate family problems in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, estranged children. And I'm telling you, if that's the case, God put me behind this podium to help you. I can help you get back in the kid's life. Now, here's the deal. You might not want to, but you got that burning desire. You'd like to, but you don't know if you're willing to. And I totally get that. That just is kind of what happens. Joe and I entered into, for the next 9 years, what I call meeting-based sobriety. And I mean, no offense against that. We didn't know that you needed to be working the steps. I basically took the steps off the wall. If you said, what's the third step? Well, it means I've turned my will and my life over to the care of God, right? What's the first step? I'm powerless over alcohol. You know, 10th step, continue to take personal inventory when I'm wrong, promptly admit it. So if I step on your toes, I've been startled awake. I know I need to apologize. That's what I thought it was all about. I had no idea there was so much more. And I'm telling you what happens in my meeting-based sobriety is oral recovery gives you relief, not freedom. See, I wanted freedom. So I go into a meeting that we're all talking about fear, and I walk out and I feel better because everybody's got fear. And I didn't realize the relief was happening. I wasn't getting the freedom. I wasn't going deeper than I needed to go. And I'm telling you what, as my life goes on, Joe, yes, as life will, says on page 14, you know, we're wresting satisfaction and happiness out of this world if we just manage well. Joe and I were AA couple, right? Everybody just loved us. We had kids. We had troubles. We were freely talking about it. We were really working hard on keeping this marriage together. It says, for if an alcoholic on page 14, for if an alcoholic failed to enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not handle certain trials and low spots. And I'm telling you, there's someone sitting in this room that is right there and scared to death to admit it. And I will stand behind this podium and say, I get to see AA on a very large level. There are people dying in our rooms. And I not on my watch. Remember, Special Forces, probably Delta. not a SEAL. I don't really like the water. But, I mean, I think I was special. I'm telling you, I can't wait to meet God. So on page 25 now, and really, really hear this because it's very important. I know some of this, and we'll get to the laughing and all the funny stuff, but on page 25, if you are a serious alcoholic as we are, we believe there's no middle of the road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible. If you're answering yes to that question, you are not alone. And if we were passing through the region from which there's no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation the best we could. That's sober. And the other was to accept spiritual help. But in order to accept spiritual help, you got to get somebody that understands how to give you that spiritual help. God will take two people and teach both of them. Right? You don't have to have somebody that knows the answers. But if you both get in the boat together and start rowing, amazing things will happen. So now Joe and I are quite a few years into sobriety. He'd always had six more than me, and he starts getting sick, and we got a problem. And we had both had catastrophic insurance. We were both self-employed. It was back in the 90s. HMOs were just happening. And I'm sitting at my meeting, and, you know, I went 5 days a week. I love my peeps in AA, and I'm talking about, Joe, there's something wrong with his brain. I think he's depressed. I can't figure it out. My girlfriend says, you ought to go drive a school bus, Katie. You'll get an instant HMO. And I thought, remember, I'm a go-getter. I'll go drive that school bus, you know, get the job for 2 weeks, get the HMO, get his head scanned. That's what the doctor wants. We can't afford an MRI. We're just barely making it as it is. And so I go to drive a school bus. Let's just take a moment and hear what I'm saying. Okay? Now imagine you're putting your precious commodity on my bus. And by the way, no adults are allowed on your bus. So if they try, no, ma'am, step off. No, just me with this guy. And I mean to tell you, oh my God, I could tell you bus story after bus story after bus story. So we get the insurance, and I tell Joe, did you call the neurologist to get the appointment? Because I only want to be on this bus for 2 weeks, 3 weeks max, right? I mean, I don't see anything selfish in that. I see that as a wise check. And he says, Katie, they said it's going to be about 3 months. Oh, no, it's not. So I call my GP, who's a World War II vet, God love him. And he goes, oh, hell, Katie, go on into the emergency room. Just tell him he's got something wrong with his head. They'll scan him in there. So I said, okay. So Joe and I go have lunch, and then we go to the emergency room because nobody's arms cut off. You know what I mean? Nobody's bleeding out. And we get in there, and I don't do well with a Western medicine. Never have. Instant dislike. I put off a vibe. They don't like me. I don't like them. One of those deals. So in comes the guy with the white coat, and you could just instantly sense, because I'm taking over. I go, and I'm in complete untreated alcoholism. I said, sir, my husband, there's something wrong with his brain. We need to have his head scanned. And he goes, oh, we do. I'm talking. Yes, we do. And now my doc had told me they're going to run him through a series of things. And I said, so Joe, be sure and fail. You know, come on, let's work an angle. Come on. You got to think that's pretty brilliant, right? So when they tell you to touch your nose, touch your elbow, touch, you know. And so the doc does that exact same thing. And he's telling Joe, and he goes, touch your nose. Joe's like, and I get behind the doc. I'm going, oh my God, I don't care if I got to shove you in the tube. We're not getting out of here. I'm not going back on that bus, okay? I've been on it 2 weeks. So the doc says, Joe, what's 2 + 2? And Joe said, you know, I'm a carpenter. I should know that. And he goes, I'll go scan his head. And I thought, oh, well, thank you. You know, we instantly just did one of those numbers. And he brings Joe back pretty quickly. And the next thing you know, he's gone an hour and a half. And I don't think anything of it. I think he's making me pay, right? Because we alcoholics know everything. I know what you're thinking. I know where you've been, you know. And it's not a woman-male thing. Trust me. It's just an alcoholic thing. And he comes back and he puts his hand on my shoulder, that doc, and he said, my God, he's got a tumor in his brain as big as my fist. And he must have said, my God, 3 times. And the very first thought I had is, I'm going to be driving this damn bus forever. That's the level of self-centeredness we suffer from. I'm not going to say that to Joe. You know, I know better. But I, you know, climbed up in Joe's lap, and we cried and cried. And they, of course, thought it was cancer. And we didn't leave that hospital for 11 days. And Alcoholics Anonymous does what Alcoholics Anonymous does. People at the hospital were like, are you a movie star? We've never seen so many people. You know, it was just devastating. And it turned out that the tumor was benign. It was a 14-hour surgery. It was unbelievable. It was benign. I have a whole lot of opinions on why, but that's controversial. And but so what ended up happening is I drove that bus for another 3 years. Okay, now, I don't know about you. I'm in the fitness business. I have a Jazzercise franchise. I'm teaching 7 days a week. I start teaching kids. I start doing the whole nine yards. Joe's not going to work. The doc writes him a letter because we're going to get Social Security disability. He said he'll never work another day in his life. That was like swallowing a tennis ball. We had a kid in college. And I'm telling you what, when we got denied Social Security, I could have easily been put in federal prison for going down to, I'm slamming on the counters. I'm like, I got a letter from a neurosurgeon and you're telling me you're going to deny me? I've been paying into that since I was 13. Are you with me? Okay, so yeah, I know you look a little shocked, but come on. It's a little stressful at the Parker house, you know? And so I got to tell you, driving that school bus, God was so good to me, but it was pretty crazy. And I drove a gas bus, and gas buses go fast. Diesel buses go very slow. Gas buses go fast, and I needed to get this done quickly. I had a life to get done. I mean, I'd clip a curb from time to time, you know. I mean, and so one day I'm on the bus. My son was on the bus. It was elementary and junior high. I didn't do high school. High school was just weird. You know, elementary and junior high. And all of a sudden the kids, I had to go down these two humps, come to a stop, take a right. And they love the back end of the bus bouncing, right? And it doesn't take much to bounce the back end of a bus. And they're like, Miss Kate, bounce us. I said, guys, I'm going to get in trouble. And your life's in the mirror, right? And I look up in that mirror and I realize, oh, hell, it's all boys. You know, you can't hurt a boy. And my son was one of them. I said, oh, get in the back. And they all got to the back of the bus. And I gassed that. And have you ever seen Armageddon when Ben Affleck gets that thing going? I swear to God, it was exactly like that. And I mean, I see these kids just, and I thought, oh my God, I mean, we're coming down at some point. And your whole life is in the mirror. And when we came down, you heard this. And I mean, they dropped like rocks. And I thought, oh God, I got broken necks, broken collarbones. I broke every bone in their body. And I swear to God, they all went. And one of them goes, what was that? I go, I don't know. So we all get off the bus, and I have blown all four valve stems off the back end of that bus. And I actually had a guy in Wichita, Kansas, I hope he hears this talk, that told me that couldn't happen. I said, you think I'm behind this podium lying? Come on. Then Charlie goes, Katie, I don't know what it is about you, but people just want to just come at you. And I'm like, oh my God. Well, you know what? Call my bus boss. He'll tell you. Blew all four valve stems off the back. So I have to call the bus yard, and I'm in trouble because I got to have this insurance, right? Joe is a sick man. And so I call, you know, get on the radio and say, turtle bus to base. They go, yeah, turtle bus, what's up? And I said, Billy, man, I've blown all four valve stems off the back end of this bus. And big boss man carried a radio on his hip, and he goes, what? I said, yes, sir, I'm over on Lisa Lane. I don't know what happened. And he goes, we're on our way. You know, they're there in 15 minutes. And those kids were like rats from a sinking ship, man. They were all gone, even my son. I mean, their houses were close in the neighborhood. So I'm just... And Billy comes and a big boss man, I'll respectfully not say his name. And he looks down, he looks up that hill, and he looks at me and he goes, you don't know what happened? And we like to say we don't lie. Oh, yes, we do. And I said, no, sir, I do not know what happened. There was no way I could lose that job. There's no way. Joe's medical bills would have been astonishingly large. And he goes, Billy, take her back to the yard. And never another word was never spoken about that. And I'm embarrassed to tell you, it was 15 years I was sober. It took me 15 more years. So at 30 years, to almost 11 years ago, I finally found that bus boss to make that amends to him. And I said, when I got him on the phone, he wasn't working at the bus yard anymore. And I said, you know, it's Thanksgiving. I just want to tell you thank you for, you know, having helped Joe and I out. And he goes, oh, come on, Kate. What's up? And I said, well, sir, I'd like to talk about those valve stems. And I swear, he goes like this. He goes, oh, it was so uncomfortable. It's like, okay, stop laughing. This is really difficult. And when I didn't tell him I'm sorry for lying, that would not have been the appropriate amends. The amends was that I made him step out of his values. His job was to protect those children. I put those children in danger. So he took a risk on me staying there. He could have been in really big trouble. And that's what the amends was about. And by the time we finished, it was about a 15-minute conversation. And he said, you know, Kate, I got to tell you, he said, you always reminded me of my mother. And I find that as a compliment. People, I don't care. I'm 67 years old. I'm not lying about how old I am. And he said, you always reminded me of my mom. And she was a strong woman like you. And I knew you were in real trouble with Joe. And he said, that's why I did it. He said, I knew you would never hurt those children. And long way around the barn, he said at the very end of the call, he says, you know, you've restored my faith in humanity. So you never know. You never know. Those amends are so much more for them than they are for us. It's a very, very big deal. And I'll tell you one other bus story, then I got to move on. Okay. I, by accident, went down the wrong road. That happens sometimes when you're not thinking. Okay. That's when you're driving a school bus, you should be thinking, but sometimes I'm not thinking. So I go down the wrong road. Well, you can't do that. You can't circle around and come back. You got to back out and get down. So there was all elementary kids, and there was a bunch of first graders in the back of the bus. And there was those big concrete mailboxes in the neighborhood. And I told them all, I said, hey, guys, when I get close to that, just say, whoa, 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 whoa. Okay? I smash right into it. And I get up, and I go back down. I look at it, I go, what happened? You were supposed to say, whoa. And this little girl starts crying. She goes, I'm only six. Fair enough. Fair enough. They've been asking too much. Well, and I got 100 bus stories, but that'll have to be for another time. I got to get back to alcoholism. So Joe is not doing well, right? Not doing well at all. It's a long story, but we are not doing well. And he ends up relapsing. Goes back out at 23 years sober and dies of a heroin overdose. It's devastating. I mean, the entire AA community was on its ear. I didn't know what the hell happened, and everybody was blaming it on the problems we had. It wasn't the problems we had. We were not working an AA program. I didn't know that. That's why my message is so much about this. Charlie, my husband, who unfortunately for anyone who knows our story, passed away 2.5 years ago of liver cancer. I got a whole, if you have Hep C, please talk to me. So he passed away 2.5 years ago of liver cancer, and he had a plane crash at the same time Joe died. So Joe died. Charlie had his plane crash. I'm losing my mind. I'm in my 40s. He's my best friend of 20 years. We're like brother and sister best friends. You know, that opposite sex, it really has a best friendship. And that's what Charlie and I had. But I lost my mind, and he was a real player. I mean, he was the guy who just kind of procreated his way through Alcoholics Anonymous. But, you know, he always wondered what Joe and I had, blah, 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 blah. So I lose my mind because I'm in complete untreated alcoholism. So of course I'm going to step outside my sexual values. And I try to kiss him. And he's sitting on the couch, and he pushes me back. He goes, what the hell is wrong with you? He goes, I said, I'm losing my mind. I can't believe I'm single, and I'm 40, and, you know, in the mid-40s. And he goes, well, I'm not blowing a 20-year best friendship because you've lost your mind. And so I thought, oh, rejection. Really? I mean, snap, snap, right? That's just thought, react. And I thought, okay, then just kiss my foot, man. And I'm walking out the door, and I don't even get to the doorknob. And he goes, hold on. I thought, yeah, you got one quick window, brother, and that window's shut. And needless to say, it was like kissing your brother. It was creepy. It was weird, but it worked. Okay. And it was, whoo, was it weird. And Charlie just did not know how to have a marriage. And I did. And I loved him so much as my best friend. We clearly got through all that. And it looked like mayhem. And now today I understand what God was trying to do was to get us behind a podium so we can talk about untreated alcoholism in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and what it looks like. I'm not saying everybody in here has it, but once we start waking up the world, we were an incredible team. How many of you guys ever got to see my husband speak? Oh, it was an amazing man, amazing guy. Oh my God, we were the yin and the yang. We were a lot coming at you. There was nobody surrendered. Let me tell you that. So in an airport, you wouldn't even know we were together. It's like one time on a plane, I wouldn't sit with him. It was on Southwest, and he keeps trying to follow me. I go, God, leave me alone. And the next thing you know, he has to sit over here. And so I hear him going, so where are you going to college? Oh, I see how this deal is working. And he won. There was a winner or a loser in almost everything, Charlie and I. But Charlie woke up because he'd had the plane crash. I'd lost Joe. We're losing our mind. We're in real trouble. And we don't know how much trouble we're in. And he meets a man named Mark Houston. And we go to a big book weekend. And Mark Houston woke Charlie up. He did not wake me up. I sat in the presence of a man who knew this book forward and backward a whole lot like Joe and Charlie. I mean, if you got an opportunity, and I just happen to be married to a Joe and a Charlie, not the same Joe and Charlie. Don't get that confused. Yeah, they were about 25 years older than I was, and that wasn't happening in my world back then. I could have gone younger, you know what I mean? But so one of the things is that these guys were bringing the book back in, and Mark Houston was amazing. You either liked him or you didn't, but what he could bring was the heat. But it didn't touch me because I'd done the counseling thing. But Charlie started getting better. Well, he can't get better on my watch. And I don't know about you ladies, but I'm going to be better than my husband. Okay, so I mean, I went and found Marty, my sponsor. She's a female. She was in untreated alcoholism, about 4 years younger than me, but her dad was a rocket scientist, and she was smart as could be. And she goes, well, hell, it's a textbook. Surely I can teach you the textbook. Now, she almost killed me, but she did get through it. And now she's, you know, we go 20 years later, she's on fire, I'm on fire, we're blown away at what God did with a handful of people. The ripple effect is unbelievable. And I got about 10 more minutes. I know it's hot in here. Just bear with me. But this is what we began learning. And this is well into sobriety. The second surrender, Bill called it emotional sobriety, right? What is emotional sobriety? I think it's my opinion, and God knows I got plenty. I think it is a misunderstanding of our third step. I had no idea that the first requirement is that I have to be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, I'm almost always in collision with somebody or something, even though my motive is good. So now you're talking about good motives? Are you kidding me? I thought that's what we're supposed to come in these rooms and become good people. So all of a sudden, I'm pissed off at you because you don't see I'm a good person. I'm just trying to be helpful here. Come on. So, I mean, it was so deeply misunderstood for all of us. Selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of our trouble. Do I believe that? Do I believe I get rid of that? That's questionable. You know what I mean? This thing up here is still quite selfish and self-centered. I have learned not to say as much out of here. But let me tell you, it's not stingy and conceited. I don't think too much of myself or too little of myself. All I think about is myself. So everything I'm saying, you are judging, right? Nah, I like that. No, I don't agree with that. You know, I mean, that's just our nature. So when you're sitting there talking to one of us, you could be nodding your head. You're not even agreeing with me at all. Yeah. But you're like, yeah, she just hadn't evolved as far as I have. You know, she just doesn't get it. So, I mean, trust me, I could be either person in this play, right? See, life's not coming at me. It's coming from me, right? I'm bringing it all to me. And I think life's coming at me. That's a big, big misunderstanding. I was voted most likable 4 years in a row in high school. Clearly, I'm not stingy and conceited with this self-centered. Charlie, on the other hand, oh, it was all over it. Now, you see the hypocrite in that? I mean, that's the beauty of what's between column 3 and 4 in a resentment inventory, right? Call it the sick man prayer, call it whatever you want, but it's the hypocrite. I could be either person in this play. That's how I get compassion. I could be the one speeding past you and scaring the crap out of you, or I could be the one that's got this crap scared out of me. Right? That's the beauty of this. I mean, I'm such a hypocrite that when I'll never forget, we had backyard dogs, right? Everybody had backyard dogs. It's none of this walking them on a leash and you have to have a leash. You have to have a leash. Like, oh, okay. We've gone a little over the top with this dog thing. And I remember the first time I saw doggy daycare. Whatever. Are you kidding me? Well, we got a COVID dog. And my little girl goes to doggy daycare on Wednesday, and she has a spa day once a month. Please tell me you hear the hypocrite in, okay? And when I'm doing it, I'm like, oh my God, I am such a hypocrite. Every once in a while on the hike and bike trail, I'll see somebody, and they look like an old vet, right? They look like an old vet, old hippie. Austin's still got a lot of old hippie in it, and he's got his dog off the leash, and I always go, that's impressive. And people are like, oh, for God's sakes, does that dog look like he's going to buck you? Now, if you got a German Shepherd that's all over somebody, that's a different story. But, and Charlie's defects were so glaring, right? I thought I had put a put a lid a little bit on mine. And Charlie's, his family is off the chain with what we call story stealing. Now, run this through your repertoire of who you are. So what happens is somebody comes up to Charlie and I, and they say, you know, hey, man, we're I'm going to Switzerland. Charlie leans and goes, Switzerland? I've been there. I went to this mountain and that mountain. And Charlie tells him all the story of Switzerland and then walks off. And I look at the guy and I go, so where are you going in Switzerland? Apparently, my self-centered husband is going to walk away. And so we're doing a big workshop. And I said, you guys, I said, you know, we got to be active listeners. So when somebody's talking to you, ask them three questions, right? And then become an active listener. And then we take a break and this guy comes running up with his pad and paper and goes, what are the three questions? And see, now the whole room should have laughed on that. I said, well, you big dope. It depends on what the conversation was. I mean, if they're going to Switzerland, you don't go, is your wife pregnant? You know, and I swear, I thought, I need to keep telling that story so we can understand. I just assume. Right. The book says also, now wait till you hear this one. The world and its people really do dominate us. In that state, the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real, has the power to kill. Go have a good day. I mean, you just go, what? Read that again? I thought, I swear to God, it's in the book. I did not know that. So the world and its people dominate us. Other than that, go have fun. Go pump your car, pull gas. You know what I mean? I mean, you're pumping your gas and you're looking over at somebody and they're doing something. You're like, oh, see, I should throw a flag on the field for that one. That's not a good move there. I mean, I wear the sheriff of the world because I got my badge on. Gonna have to get everybody set them right. And here's another one, right? I talked about the first requirement. You know, would you rather, after I lay something out that's pretty heavy and somebody leans in and goes, well, would you rather be right or happy? Well, I'd rather knock you in the head, really, if you really want to know the truth. But, I mean, if I want to be right or happy, I damn sure want to be right. And if happiness follows, lucky me, you know? I mean, that is truly who we are. You know, now I can fake it. Good point. But you got it. That's like asking me to work the step and hope the promise, or work the promise and hope the step comes true. You got to work the step and then you get the promise. It says that I'm a victim of the delusion that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if I just manage well. Well, let me tell you something. I got a buddy named Mike Lorenz. Get a hold of some of his stuff. There's some of y'all have heard Chris and Charlie and I in Canada. That was 2008. I've learned a lot since 2008. Try to get some more current stuff if you like. If I speak your language, I may not speak your language. You may be going, when is this chick is over? Like, I get it. But if I speak your language and you're understanding what it is, there's a lot more out there. There's other people that do speak our language. But this victim of the delusion, a guy named Mike Lorenz, his Don Pritz lineage, really an amazing lineage, and Gary Brown, that whole crowd, I swear to God, I do 10 steps calls with him. And every once in a while, I got to put pen to paper really to find out. I think you should write inventory once a month on a big problem that's rolling around in your head. Are you getting relief? You're getting freedom. We're looking for freedom because those little blocks that you have will cause you big problems, right? Before you know it, you're blowing up at the counter at the bank. So that's what I'm talking about. So I call Lorenz and he said, you know, Katie, he said, what would happen if you took the high road? And I swear to God, I thought, never have. I mean, that stopped me in my tracks. And I said, Mike, here's the worst part. I don't even know how to get there. What is the high road? I have always been a conflict of interest scale. What? You got a problem? Let's talk about it. Come on. And so what ends up happening is he goes, but I'm more interested in why. And I said, well, if not me, who? Who's going to settle the problems of the world out there, for God's sakes? You know, I mean, you got to have somebody at the pump. Come on, move it. We got people waiting. Get off that phone, right? Big problem. So I'm at a conference and Charlie couldn't make it to the conference with me. And the next thing you know, the guy's up there reading how it works. There's about 600 people in the room and I'm the guest speaker, right? That's not my meeting. I'm the guest speaker. And he can't get a hold of the room and he's reading how it works. And it's like, rarely have we seen a person. And I thought, oh, he's killing me. And then I thought, no, I'm not going to get up there and tell these folks to shut up. I am the guest speaker. And all of a sudden, my buddy, the taper, comes out from behind there and he leans in. He goes, hey, everybody, shut up. We got an AA meeting going here. And I thought, well, I'll be damned. 1 week later, I got to see what Lorenz was saying. If not me, who? Somebody else will step into that position. I had no idea. I'm telling you guys. And the other thing is, one of my sponsees that just like me, she called me one day. She goes, she couldn't take the high road. She didn't know how to get there either. And she said, oh, my God, Katie, there are no assholes on the high road. I said, I know it. I was shocked. It's amazing. You get to set it down, right? I mean, my DNA is an extreme example of self-will and right. If you're looking at me and going, I see that she's got it, so do you, right? I'm just the one who's speaking out loud on it. But we all have this, right? I got about 4 more minutes. I swear, I know it's hot. I am, since Charlie died, nothing can die on my watch, right? He's been gone about 2.5 years. Nothing can die on my watch. I'm getting a June bug out of the pool, for God's sakes. Its little wing is doing this number. I'm like, it's weird, but it's happening. So I'm driving down this fairly busy road in Austin, and this little kitten just shoots out. And I realize, I look in my rearview mirror, and I realize I can stop and try to grab it. And this guy's coming at me, and he stops. So the kitten is under one of our vehicles. Well, I think we may have run over it, but we didn't. And all of a sudden, he's a Hispanic guy, and he doesn't speak any English. And he says it's, you know, basically up in my wheel well. And so he hands me some gloves, and this little kitten's just, you know, like this. And a guy blows his horn. I swear to God, that's a... And I mean, I got it, a sponsee on my earbud. I scream, F you, buddy, sorry. We're out in the middle of the road. Would you like me to explain why? Or can you wait a minute and a half? You know, and he goes like this. I thought, oh, dude, do not mess with me at this moment. I get that kitten out and I held it up like Mufasa. I mean, it was completely feral. It had bit through my glove, and yeah, you know, I'm like, God damn it, I got this sucker dying on my watch. Its little tail was all bent up, and I took it to the emergency room. I drove home like this, you know. It's oh my God. I swear to God, you know, when it says I'm driven by this self-centered fear, I'm scared to death, I'm not gonna get it, then I'm gonna get it and I'm gonna lose it. I'm not going to get the job. I get the job. Now I'm scared to death. I won't keep the job. See, this is this vicious cycle that a lot of us don't know. The fears I have in life today, for what they're worth, I am scared to death we're going to lose the art of conversation. The telephone has taken over. And I'm telling you guys, if you're sitting at a table and three people are on their phone and you know them, you tell them, put your phone down, guys. We're not going to, don't look at your phone. Somebody's got to take this. Sam, somebody's got to stand up. It's going to be lost. And the 15 people that are clapping, you got a lot of people that don't agree. So be sure you see this, okay? Because I'm telling you, the art of conversation is an art. And God cannot work through a cell phone like that. If you're not sitting next to somebody that's supposed to say something to you, you're going to miss the whole thing. I'm a huge fan of talking to strangers. You'd be shocked at what you end up getting. It says, above everything, we must be rid of this selfishness. We must or it kills us. So our troubles are of our own making. That's the greatest promise in the book. If you want to be free, the problem has got to be me, period. I take full responsibility for any disruption I have. And I will take that. People usually associate victory with success, not falling and stumbling. And I'm telling you something, guys, the terms of the deal, he'll provide what I need if I keep close to him and perform his work well. In order to get close to him, I got to get unblocked. And I cannot get unblocked by talk therapy in AA. I've got to put pen to paper. In order to stay close to him, I got to get close to him. In order to get close to him, I got to get unblocked. I write love letters to God. I'm a huge fan of them. It's a little bit of the two-way prayer that Henrietta Seiberling was the one who knew that somebody was coming to talk to Dr. Bob. Very cool history stuff. This is one of my love letters. It says, Father God, please guide me to who you want me to be. Help me see life through your eyes. Help me do what you want, what is right in front of me, and stay in the moment. Please help me have fun in my life. My child, you're such a beautiful spirit. You want so much more for others, and you guide them to it. So do the work and stay in the present moment. Your life is full. You are a gift. You always have been. I love you so much. See, I was living in this bungalow. I had no idea God had a palace. I'm 17 years sober, losing my mind. Had no idea. No idea. My pride thinks it's protecting me when, in fact, it's trying to kill me. I like to end with a love letter. My husband was such a romantic. He was such a big old burly guy. Oh, I swear to God, he'd brush his teeth at the restaurant if he could, you know. It's like, Charlie, let's step it up a few notches, brother. I mean, I swear to God, we had the most wonderful life, and yet at the same time, we wanted to kill each other. So please do not think there weren't plenty of problems. But he was such a romantic, and he had never been with a woman like me. Never anybody that held him accountable for showing up at the person he needed to be. So he'd leave love letters all over the house. He says, I don't have the perfect words to express everything wonderful that you mean to me. But today, I just want to tell you how much happiness you bring to me over the years. Being your husband is the pride and joy of my life. God is with us, and he will always be with you. Thank you so much for being my best friend, my wife, and my great counselor. I hope you have a great birthday, and I look forward to many more. Your loving husband, Charlie. It's been an honor and a privilege. Thank you.